Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of The Michael and Patty Show. I am Michael.
And I'm Patty.
This is where we put the real in PEI real estate. If you haven't been on an episode before, we bring you over four decades of combined experience, thousands of transactions handled, and we try to present things in the most transparent way possible. No self-promotion. Our only goal is to help you, the buyers and sellers of PEI real estate, or for that matter, real estate anywhere in North America, because it's basically the same thing, isn't it?
For the most part, it is. Different areas, associations, jurisdictions might have their own set of rules and regulations that you have to be aware of, but basically the principle of how to do real estate is pretty much the same all across North America.
Absolutely. And our new Facebook group, if you haven't heard, has been taking off. We're up over 400 members or very close to it. Haven't checked in the last couple of days. It's called Moving to Prince Edward Island with Michael and Patty. And basically, it's a Facebook group that's an offshoot of this podcast that we share all kinds of interesting stuff, give you a forum that you can ask questions about moving to PEI, or maybe you're selling and you want to move somewhere else next, which is probably never going to happen, right?
Well, some people, PEI is not for everybody.
Sure it is. It's the ideal place. It's paradise. So check out the Facebook group. One of the things I put on there is I put a video of a beach, which you mentioned this morning. It's on the North Shore. Basically, it's white sandy beach and sand dunes. As far as the eye can see, you can walk for miles in either direction. The nice thing is you don't have to pay for access or go through a toll booth or anything else because it's not a national park. So that's on the Facebook group. Any other interesting stuff why they should visit?
Well, and the value to our listeners with regards to the Facebook group is it is, as you had said, an extension of this podcast. However, it does provide a snapshot summary. We are starting right back from episode one. So you will be able to go back, if you are so inclined to all the previous posts within the Facebook group. And it provides a summary snapshot plus links that we reference and refer to within our episodes. So if you know in episode 33, there was mention, then it's very easy on the podcast Facebook group to be able to just scroll to that particular podcast post. Plus, we have Toolbox Tuesdays, which has a ton of valuable information every week, you know, with regards to whether you're moving with pets, the utilities that you may need to set up, school information. There's going to be a ton of information there to help make the decision or help make the transition a little easier if you are relocating from another province or area on this planet.
What day is Toolbox Tuesday happen?
I think it is self-explanatory. And we also have Thoughtful Thursdays where people just get to share in stories and that.
Sounds exciting. So look for the Living in Prince Edward Island with Michael and Patty Facebook group. Moving along, the stats are out for July. As we've indicated before, they usually take a week or two before they get to us. And in a nutshell, home sales are up 5.6%. Keep in mind, the stats are based on really small numbers, just like PEI. So what they're citing here is it's 5.6% compared to 213 units in 2024, and now we're at 2025. So it's only a difference of 12 units.
Yeah.
But it sounds huge. Sales are up almost 6%.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what people need to be mindful of are the number margins are so low.
New listings. Well, they're up almost 10% at 9.5%. 437 new listings compared to 399 last year. Market is balanced. This has been consistent for months. So it's a balanced market, which means the market is neither in favor of buyers or sellers, but then they put a sub note or a footnote that says it's tilted slightly in the favor of sellers. Now, that doesn't mean it's COVID time again and your $400,000 home is worth $1 million because you're still seeing a bunch of those, particularly in commercial real estate. Have you checked out the commercial section?
No.
It's there's some good laughs in there.
I see.
So check out the commercial section if you really want to see some overpriced properties, in my opinion.
Well, and just with regards to the balanced market, we've actually been in a balanced market. Again, you have to go more hyper-local to certain communities on Prince Edward Island that we're referring to. But it has been like this since we came out of COVID. Around third quarter 2022 is when we traversed from a strong seller's market that went on for about 2 years to a balanced market. And we're still seeing that.
Benchmark price, which is supposed to be illustrative of the typical home and PEI, is up 3.7%. The benchmark price in July, $379,200, up from $365,600 in July of 2024. You noted a lot of the agents you see this time of the year, they're talking about how hot the market is. I think what they're doing in all sincerity is indicating that this is probably one of the hottest years in temperature because it reached, I think, 35 degrees one day last week, which was awesome. I just love it. We had a few 32s. That is what I would consider a hot market. It's actually warm, but you were saying something different.
Well, I just don't want our listeners. So just so that you know what time of year it is for us right now, it is August 2025 is when we are doing this episode. And unfortunately, I do see there's not a lot, but there are some messages going out that I am seeing on social media saying it's a hot market, call me today. You know, I have properties, if you want your property sold, I have lots of buyers. Buyers are more educated and savvy today. They have so much at their fingertips. They're not jumping into anything. They're feeling a little more confident with the interest rates and that, but I think it's a little bit of a misrepresentation saying it's a hot market. Hot market existed from mid-year 2020 to about mid-year 2022. We have about 1,200 residential properties. That includes condos, townhouses, mini homes, everything on the market today. Whereas during COVID, we ended up, our low number was under 600. So you can see we have double the inventory right now. That doesn't imply a hot market.
The other day I had somebody ask me for houses or any dwellings that were within 20, 25 minutes to Charlottetown. So I ran a map search. So I just mapped out about 25 minutes driving time to Charlottetown. And it came up with about 500 listings. I thought, what's going on here? Did I mess up the software? Did I map this incorrectly? Did I put some parameters in here that shouldn't be in there? So I ran it two or three times, and it gave me this huge number. I had no idea there's that many houses for sale right now within 20 to 25 minutes of Charlottetown. Did you?
No, that's crazy.
And if I did the math right, the whole island, I think, has, what, 1,300 houses for
sale? There's around 1,200, yeah.
So 1,200 or 1,300 in the whole island, and most, or I should say, a fair percentile of those houses are within 25 minutes to the center of the universe.
Which is Charlottetown?
Just like it's Toronto in Ontario. which seems to me like that's why you're seeing houses sit longer, and you're seeing the for sale signs, you're seeing the open houses, you're seeing the new price or price reduced signs, which we all know from this podcast means what?
Overpriced to begin with.
So you're seeing a lot of that stuff.
And I have had a client actually ask me last week. They said, Patty, why are we seeing so many new priced signs? Is that something that we should put on our property listing? Because we have reduced the price about a week and a half ago. And I had said to them, no, because that is us outwardly acknowledging that we overpriced it to begin with. And then they said, then don't put a new price sign on ours. And I said, that's what's happening. Many people are still. So in real estate professionals' defense, we have to use data that was already like historical data on properties that have sold in the past, not properties that are going to sell in the future. So by using the data from yesterday, and depending on how far back they start digging, Sometimes the numbers may seem a little high. I know everyone's property is special and unique, and there's nothing else like it, and it was a custom features within the home. However, it doesn't mean your property, the buyers will tell you what your property is worth. And if you have no showings, it's because the buyers don't feel the price matches the product that is being offered on the market.
Years ago, I was in a house. One of the unique features about this house is the hallways were covered from wall to wall with this red shag carpet. And in the upstairs hallway, they had a jacuzzi tub.
Weird,
I would say. Getting back to Patty's mess ups. Our fact checker pointed out there was some erroneous information on one of the episodes. And I actually, when I heard Patty make this statement, I thought it was incorrect, but Patty's never been wrong before. So who was it but me to question Patty's accuracy?
I think our listeners know you would have no problem calling me out if you felt I made an incorrect statement.
And this is illustrative of looking at your contracts, the paragraphs you're writing, the paragraphs the people you're negotiating are writing, because some words, not necessarily the first one, but the second one that I'm going to introduce or discuss, can be interpreted sometimes in different ways to your advantage or disadvantage. So what our fact checker said, Tricia, is she said that Patty used the word shall improperly. And this in real estate can sometimes, the misuse of a word can sometimes cost you thousands of dollars. So even though it seems nitpicky that we're discussing a couple little single syllable words, the definitions are really important. So what Patty said is shall meant you may or may not do. My definition has always been you're going to do it. And our fact checker, Tricia, said the same thing, Patty. So how can you defend yourself for such a massive error?
I cannot defend myself. So I will explain. I had a situation many years ago with regards to a water test. And my recollection of the series of events, because I went back and I rechecked the clause. So the clause that I'm referring to is the water test clause. And the water test clause says that the seller shall do work to correct. How was that clause written? I just need to make sure I'm quoting this right because I don't want to be corrected again. So the clause states, I don't want to read all of this, the buyer, the test report. Should the water quality test report not meet the Government of Canada recommended health standards, the seller may perform such work at his or her own expense as may be required to obtain a clear test. If the seller is not able to obtain a clear test prior to the completion date, the agreement shall be null and void, and the buyer's deposit money shall be returned in full without interest or penalty. The seller shall ensure that all water tests are sampled by a third party who does not have a vested interest in the sale of the property. So the important words there are that the word shall implies that it is definitive. They have to do this work. It traditionally indicates a mandatory obligation or requirement, essentially meaning a must. But the word may has a different. It doesn't mean that they have to. It is recommended or suggested, and you can get into the may part of it. But that was a correction. So it was my interpretation of the series of events that it happened. And I only read part of the water test clause too, just full disclosure. I only read the second half. The first half is all about the buyer. But it, just to make sure that I'm stating it correctly, the word shall is a must. You must do it. The word may implies that you may or may not have to. And this is what ended up happening. The seller disputed our clause and said that they did not have to do any remedies as per our clause within our contract agreements.
So where this story stems from is I actually brought up an old contract I wrote in 2010. And in the Schedule A, which has a set of standard phrases that we would amend or append to the purchase and sale agreement, one of which is the water test. So the way the water test was written, without reading it verbatim, making it a little more exciting, is it basically says that the owners are going to do a water test, and if it comes back bad or it fails, they may fix it and do another water test or remedy the situation by installing a filter or a UV light or whatever the case may be, dual osmosis. But a sharp lawyer picked out the fact that it says they may. May means it's expressing a possibility. It's expressing permission. You may do this or I may do that. But it doesn't say you have to. So this lawyer said, we've elected to may not. So they said, we're not fixing it. You want clean water? You can pay for the filter system, the UV, the water softener, and get into $1,700, $2,000. So that's where this all came up. But shall means it has to be done. Its definition is expressing a strong assertion or intention. Moving along.
Yes, I think we beat that to death.
We do that with all subjects. We need a bell or a timer.
Okay.
There's a subdivision in PEI that was developed in the late 70s. I think it was 1978. We had someone visit from another country, come here, start chopping up PEI in little pieces and selling it off. In this case, it's the subdivision of building lots. These building lots are fairly large, you know, 5-10 acres, whatever the case may be. And for some reason, I don't understand the logic behind this at all, because this person, I believe, owned the adjoining property. They put the right-of-way in the front of all these lots, the front meaning the waterfront side, or where the fall-off is to the beach or the water. So this right-of-way, which actually was 66 feet, which is where it's supposed to be. Some of the older ones are 40 feet or 30, but it should be 60. As per TPW standards, transportation and public works. However, 1978 was a long time ago. I was only 10. You were what, 15?
I am younger than you, but
the right-of-way is now gone. So these lots recently, when I did my CMA, comprehensive market analysis, to try to determine value for a potential seller, had sold anywhere between $18,000 to $90,000. None of these lots have a legal right-of-way. Further to that, they haven't gotten together as a group, which would be very hard to do regardless, to establish the right-of-way on the back of the property, which is really where it should be. Putting a right-of-way in the front not only detracts from the value because you're going to have people driving by, but now you have a laneway in front of your waterfront home. So this subdivision, and this is the point to this discussion, just make sure that you actually have a right-of-way that exists, because in this case, the right-of-way would require helicopter access because it's air.
Absolutely. And that was something, because I had in that subdivision, Michael, a property quite a few years ago. I had it listed. And when you were telling me about you possibly listing a property in that area, I have all the old surveys in that of the subdivision, and I had a hard time with a clear conscience because I kept telling everyone that inquired on this property, there's no access. There's technically no access. When you look at the survey and you compare that to the ortho, where the survey indicated that the right-of-way access was, which again is on the waterfront side of these properties, it no longer exists. It has been washed away to the ocean and sea. I think my seller was a little frustrated because I wasn't able to sell it, but it was because I wanted to make sure I protected them, I protected myself, and I made sure that the buyers were well informed, or the buyer's agents that had inquired on this property. In the end, they ended up listing with somebody else and they did get it sold. I am glad I'm not part of all of that, because I can't sleep at night knowing that the buyers may not be aware that their access probably doesn't exist and will need to be reestablished. But like you said, everyone within that subdivision will all have to come together, agree to have it resurveyed, agree to redefine the right-of-way access, which could be done. It just needed to be set up and established on the backside, not on the waterfront side. So do your due diligence when you are looking into properties on PEI and make sure you have a legitimate right-of-way access or a way to get to your property.
In this particular case, in a lot of these cases, you don't necessarily have to have all the neighbors agreeing to the right-of-way, but you would have to have an agreement with whatever properties you're going to be formally trespassing over. Because chances are you're not going to have any issues, and someone will put a laneway in there, and for the next 50 years, it will be fine until someone reads the deed. This particular case, I don't know if you've looked at this deed, but it is super cryptic, and it would be something you'd want a surveyor to determine what exactly it's telling you, because it wasn't just a straight, you know, there's a 66-foot right-of-way along the southern boundary of all these properties. It was spelling out each and every marker in time-based survey terminology.
So tell the listeners what they need to do to help make sure that they're protected and they know what questions to ask of their real estate agent or
read the deed.
Yep.
But in this case, you'd almost have to have a surveyor reading the deed too. But this is a fairly rare case, but these do exist. Make sure you have access. That's the bottom line. Because even if you know all the neighbors and they're all great and they have a handshake agreement, those lots may convey to somebody else that's not so easy to get along with.
Yes. Yeah, so check your, look at the ortho maps, the survey, get the survey from the deed. Absolutely, you could consult with a surveyor for their interpretation of everything.
The deed's all that matters. The ortho maps, the aerial photos, all the stuff you generate online, the satellite imagery with property lines, all that matters is the deed.
And absolutely. All I'm saying is a lot of our ortho maps that we are able to print off from the government site will, with waterfront properties, again, this is approximate, which is why I don't like putting lines on my listings because it is approximations. And they do indemnify themselves with a little disclaimer at the bottom of these property sheets that they provide the mapping. But you can reconcile it with the survey. And if you can see that the property line now shows that it is a third of the way in and the original property line that the survey is probably referencing is out in the ocean, it's a pretty good indication.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not sure if actual indemnification would hold up in court if it ever made it that far. I think you'd have to have the purchaser sign off to say, there's no right-of-way to this property. I acknowledge there's no right-of-way to this property, and I will not hold anybody responsible. Because I don't think you're going to be indemnified.
No, I just mean the government on their...
on them. I know they put their... Well, it doesn't really matter where it's coming from. But at the end of the day, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree with this, I think it should be stated on the purchase and sale that I'm buying a property that I know there's no right-of-way to. Without a helicopter.
I would 100% agree if you are aware that the right-of-way is questionable, but yet you choose to move forward because you're so excited, you love the price, you'll deal with that later. I think that to protect the seller, to protect the agents involved, assuming there's real estate professionals, which we strongly advise to have involved, because they're the ones that have access to all these systems and know how to guide you through the process and make sure hopefully you ask the right questions. 100% you should do some sort of documentation or clause with that.
Because the other thing that's going to happen is you're going to apply for a building permit for your new luxury beach house, and that's going to potentially be turned down because there's no access. Maritime Electric is going to want to install electrical poles, and they're going to say, where's the right-of-way? So now they need to probably sign an easement. If there's no right-of-way, even if there is a right-of-way, they would sign an easement. An easement just gives them access to their stuff. You're going to run into a lot of problems. Moving along here. Oh, one last thing. I've got a piece of property that I just bought through you that has no right-of-way.
Okay.
What can I do with it now that it's absolutely worthless? Do I hire another agent to sell it to another unsuspecting victim? Or what can I do honestly?
Honestly, I feel you should be looking at getting it redefined.
We can't do that.
Oh,
I'm stuck with it.
Yes. This is something that...
You sold me crap.
Okay. No, the property that I had, and this is what my seller got upset with me too, is I did go to the government And I had asked if they would be interested, because I know they own other pieces of land within the subdivision, in acquiring this property. Now, the province will purchase pieces of land, different properties on Prince Edward Island, as if it's in their best, if it's in their best interest to do so, because they're trying to preserve land or they're aware of erosion. So they will purchase, but they only have a budget to do so much per year. And I did try, and I started the process for the sellers to maybe sell that property to the government so that no one had to deal with this, but they disagreed with me. And the province had said they didn't have the budget. They were going to look into it. They were going to register or log that property down as for the next potential year, one of the properties that they may acquire. But 100% a great suggestion.
Next topic, and it's a quick one. When you get your property tax bill, make sure that the assessment value is under what it should have as a fair market value. So if you've got a building lot and fair market value says by CMA that your real estate agent can do or appraised value is 100, your assessment value should typically be less than that. I talked to the tax department the other day because I own a property that's being hugely overtaxed. What I did is I went to the GeoLink report, which we have access to, and it tells me who the assessor is. So I did what any honest agent would do. I showed up at his house Sunday night at 11 o'clock at night and said, "This tax assessment is nuts." No, I didn't do that. I actually phoned him on his cell phone. And what he said to me is you have to make this appeal within 90 days. Whether or not that's actually been legislated, I don't know. I'm making the appeal now. But keep an eye on those assessment values, because I have seen them completely erroneous. $30,000 lots paying taxes on $90,000. You've probably seen the same.
Yeah. And if you take a look at your property tax assessment that you get if you own property here on PEI, take a look at that and make sure it's in alignment what you should be paying. The other thing is, if you're a buyer and you receive the tax assessment for a property and it seems like it's out of alignment, or after closing they end up providing, because that's usually when they end up reassessing properties, is at conveyance or after conveyance, then it's something that you should be aware of to dispute and see if you can get an adjustment, because I've had many that have done that over the years.
I had a client this week ask me if there's any historical photos of the waterfront property he bought, and I said to him, absolutely there is. They're called aerial obliques, and what these are is historical photos that I assume were taken by an airplane, and they go back to the late 1930s or so, but there's been huge things happen in this area, and I thought they were quite interesting. Maybe you can tell us something about that.
Yeah, well, you just brought my attention to this today, so I'm pretty excited to go take a look at that.
You should be.
Yeah, well, the building that I had bought for our office in that, I was looking back to try, because I didn't actually have a date to see what the land looked like prior to the office being built, and it's just kind of interesting to see the story, how the land evolved around. I mean, obviously people are going to be most interested in their property or a property that they're about to purchase. But you have said that it is nicely organized now. It is more of an aerial photo map versus a very faded black and white, looking like it's been photocopied 100 times and you're trying to make out the images that you are seeing. I'm actually really looking forward to checking this out. This would be something that would be available publicly.
Anything you're looking for relating to PEI that's typically government orientated, just type in gov.pe.ca and what you're looking for. In this case, aerial obliques. Poof, came up on my screen. There's the map. You just touch the little button. It shows you that area, and then you can select what you're looking for. Moving along. The market is thin. I've noticed, not just with myself, but with other agents, they'll list a cottage up west, which is anything west of Summerside, up west, opposed to down east, which is east of Stratford, Charlottetown. It's a thin market, and I've noticed a lot of sellers are switching agents, thinking they're going to change the market. Here's the numbers I came up with when I ran up west cottages. Again, I couldn't believe that they were so thin. There's 26 active cottages for sale. I believe these were none waterfront. 15 sold this year, which basically, if you calculate the absorption rates, how big of a supply do we have for cottages up west right now?
About 2 years.
So is it reasonable to expect, if the absorption rate is 2 years, to have your cottage sold in 3 to 4 months?
No, it's not the same as a residential property, say in Charlottetown, where we have 64 days or so average on market. No, it looks like a couple years it's going to take.
So it's a thin market. You're not going to change that. In fact, the other thing I found when I ran these active cottages is a lot of the prices are running into waterfront territory. In other words, why would somebody buy a water view cottage when they can buy a waterfront cottage for the same amount of money? And even those waterfront cottages are sitting. So it's pretty, pretty thin, as Larry David would say.
Yeah, and just know, if it's going to take 2 years to sell, you have to make the decision. Are you wanting to take the 2 years? You just need to be well-educated and informed. Or do you need to get out sooner? So start planning today if you are looking to move a property. I don't like advising clients to negotiate with themselves and do fire sales and keep reducing. But if you are looking to sell a cottage property on Western Prince Edward Island, we would recommend you start doing your due diligence today. Place the property confidently on the market at market value, or because if you have a little bit of time, maybe just a smidge above, and then be able to sit. Know that it's going to take a couple years' time. You're not going to get a ton of showings, but you will get some showings.
How many smidges would I need to buy a practical used car?
Oh, you're going to analyze my smidge word. A smidge. Let's just say within market, the high end of market value range.
10%.
Sure. That's my smidge.
Awesome. You've had these clients before from the big city, the hustle and bustle of Toronto or New York or LA or wherever. They list a property and they're wondering why, after you've listed their house, up west or anywhere on the island for that matter that's rural, why you're not reporting to them on a weekly basis to inform them of how many inquiries and emails and questions you've received on a weekly basis. Is it reasonable for me as a seller to expect my agent to report to me weekly when I list a rural property in PEI that could potentially take months or years to sell?
No, and I feel, especially Prince Edward Island, because we have a market. If you're in Charlottetown or, you know, more of an urban kind of, you know, Summerside, even Montague area, you may have a little bit more to report. But if you're a rural area on Prince Edward Island, I feel weekly phone calls or updates are only going to continuously remind you that your property is on the market and it's not selling. And I think that would create a frustrating experience. I mean, the whole purpose of hiring a real estate professional is you put your property, the marketing, the following up with leads and inquiries, the representation, your agent should know majority. There's always those questions that come up that we never asked during our listing process, but majority of the answers for your on your behalf for your property, you should be getting on with your life and enjoying things and working and maybe planning your move going forward with the realistic expectation based on what your particular market states that days on market is going to end up taking. The weekly reminder, it just doesn't make sense to me. I do monthly. I reach out to my clients on a monthly basis. They'll get an activity report and there's a really cool link that they can also get and check whenever they want to know that I am working. I'm working every day.
Somebody told me that when you list a rural property, you get them to take a picture of you because you tell them that you're going to forget what I look like by the time this property sells.
That's pretty funny. I never heard that.
Not
Is that
true?
What your clients get you to do? They'll never see you again.
Warren Buffett, look out. There's a new investment opportunity in PEI. Buy a waterfront lot for $120,000, and a year later, it could be miraculously worth $260,000, according to this one buyer. You ever heard that before?
A buyer or a seller?
Oh, I get this. From time to time, you'll get somebody that buys a property, in this case, a $120,000 building lot, and then they'll hear a rumor that someone's cousin's friend's brother's uncle's son that went to school with the grandmother in high school or something sold a waterfront lot for $260,000. So all of a sudden, this buyer, now a landowner, thinks her lot's worth $260,000 in short of a year. Listen, if this was the case, Warren Buffett and every investor in the planet Earth would be calling to more than double their money in 1 year. This isn't reality. That $120,000 lot a year later is probably worth about $120,000.
And I did do a CMA on a property that was sold a few years back. Sold for around $130,000, $140,000 is what it sold for. They wanted to sell it less than a year later, and the CMA came up at about $150,000, which is still pretty good, you know, that the market had gone up a little bit. However, they were adamant that this property had over doubled and listed it at over doubled the price. And it just sat there, and they were very frustrated with me, feeling that I was not doing my job in moving their property. But I couldn't convince anyone to pay over double what it was worth. I tried. It's like, here's the property. It's very frustrating.
And you know what they probably told you?
They found a new agent.
They always do. They find the miracle agent.
Yes.
They probably told you there's no property like it on the island.
They did.
That's what they always do. I had another one they bought for $130,000. 2 years later, it was on the market for $650,000. I said, it's not worth $650,000. What'd they do? They found the miracle agent.
But did the miracle agent sell it?
No, but it's still listed.
And if they want $650,000, sure, or $250,000 or whatever that inflated price is, just know it might take you 10 years, 20 years to get it.
Unethical behavior and what not to do to home buyers. If you have a problem with your house, don't listen to contractors that say your house is all rotten and it's going to fall apart, so you should sell it to somebody else. Be honest. Treat people the way you want to be treated. Patty, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about this, but before you do, I do have a warning that vinyl siding can really make anything look amazing. You've heard the saying, lipstick on a pig.
Mm-hmm.
So this particular house had vinyl siding, but when the contractor put his hand underneath the siding, he was greeted with air.
Yes, it was just an open highway for any little rodents that decided to walk the perimeter of this particular home to see where an entry port would be for the winter to maybe...
We refer to it as a mouse way.
A mouse way.
Yes.
Oh, nice. So you do need to be mindful when you're looking at properties, or if you're a homeowner right now who maybe does have a rodent issue, a mouse issue, to just go around your siding and see if they're... And you had pointed out, Michael, they just need such a small little pinhole.
I was told a pencil hole, not a pinhole.
Okay, pencil hole. Is this one of the big jumbo red pencils we
use? I'm glad you asked that, because it's actually one of those carpenter pencils.
Yes.
The rectangular ones that don't roll away. Because I asked him that. I said, what pencil are you referring to? Are you referring to a number 9 or a number 10 or a carpenter's pencil?
Interesting. As a buyer, if you notice a home and vinyl siding, like you had said, Michael, is able to really hide a lot, but just put your hand around, especially if you notice the garden beds are high. Garden beds should not touch the siding. You should have a space where you see the foundation or a concrete, some sort of skirting to, unless they are Spider-Man and they're climbing up it, to make sure that there is no water touching the sheathing underneath the vinyl siding or underneath your whatever siding, unless it's brick and you probably don't have to worry about this. If you are looking at a home and you notice maybe some higher ground, higher garden beds, which you shouldn't because they're full of water, and then you'll need to check the basement and foundation, and because that's a whole other issue than what we're referring to right now, but just tuck your hands in. No one's asking you to damage someone's home, but just lightly see if everything feels intact. you will know your fingers will go all the way up underneath the siding or feel like it is rotted and you've got some crumbling of wood underneath it.
What if you poke a mouse?
Okay, well, that would freak me right out.
So we don't have a lot of brick houses in PEI, but even if a garden was up against a brick, I would still be cautious because they usually have these little vent holes on the bottom that will let air
yes.
out, inversely let water in and rot whatever's behind it, behind the Tyvek, depending on how it's been applied. Wood should not touch dirt, so this also applies to decks or stairs or anything wood should not be touching dirt. Just keep this in mind. The other thing you're going to look for is the slope to see if the water is draining against the house. Anything else before we move on?
No, just make sure the water slopes or drains away. Your eaves troughs are away so you don't have pooling. Make sure your garden beds are below the siding level so that you don't have to worry about everything rotting underneath.
If you're running around with buyers and they have a house to sell, do you not think it would be prudent in this market, our balanced market slightly in favor of the sellers, particularly in August, which is probably the busiest time of the year because the weather is nice and people like looking at houses in nice weather, to know if that party, the home seller, is going to accept an offer contingent or subject to them selling their house?
Yes, but you never know if you're out with a buyer and they're looking at 3, 5, 10 properties, which one they're actually going to prefer, and maybe this is the property that most interests the buyer. You can't screen every single seller and say, "Would you accept 48-hour or
why not?"
I don't think realtors are going to do it. I wouldn't do it.
Because this particular property has had at least two people, one person made an offer, one person was talking about making an offer, but these people absolutely do not want to sit around waiting for somebody to sell a house.
That's very different. So then in that sense, a listing agent, if a seller has instructed and advised them of that, when the buyer is scheduling the appointment, the seller's representative, their realtor, could very easily say, if your client is a buyer that has something to sell, please know we will not be entertaining an offer.
What about
unless
taking it
it's already
further?
Under contract and it's already...
Well, there's always extenuating circumstances.
Correct.
Yeah, obviously, if you're a buyer and your house is under contract, all the conditions are removed, the deposit is $50,000 non-refundable or 10%, you're in a pretty good position. But for the most part, the people offering on houses, in this particular case, the house had been on the market multiple times. It didn't sell multiple times. They canceled the listing multiple times. So I would have to surmise or guess that what they're doing is they're looking around at houses, and if they happen to find something they like, they're going to put their house on over market value, and it's never going to sell, and you've just tied the vendors up for potentially a number of months, because vendors sort of tie themselves emotionally to the offer, and then a month later, you'll say to them, well, do you want to continue with this arrangement, because they said they had a few showings, and things are looking really good, even though nothing's changed at all. Well, they're kind of emotionally involved in the first buyer, so you're like, okay, we'll wait another month, and then the whole season passes by, and now it's tougher to sell.
Yeah, we don't have Hawaii weather where we have 365 days of beautiful buying season temperatures.
Do you remember
climate.
That agent we were with in the States when we were on training? She was from Hawaii, and
yes.
She said her definition of a hard day is when it rained.
Yes, I know. So time is of the essence here. We have a peak selling season during our summer months where we have, and why we say that is because that is typically when, like you had said previously or earlier in this episode, Michael, you know, there's people that come on cruise ships. There's people that, you know, will visit Prince Edward Island, fall in love with it, and either decide right then and there that they want to purchase something. That's usually when people make the decision. They make the decision while they're here on vacation or, you know, no one wants to travel typically during the winter months to see what PEI looks like. They want to experience the red cliffs and the sandy
beaches.
It's
just a rabbit trail.
No, it's just that's typically when the buyers are here visiting or potential future buyers. That's why it's our peak season.
I just sold the property to somebody from British Columbia. I've known this gentleman for years, and he's looking at a raw piece of waterfront land that we now have under contract. And he had a number of questions that pertain to things that they're doing in BC with respect to their laws and regulations and so forth. So basically, what I'm going to cover here is this is not BC and it's not Ontario. Moving along.
Yeah, and plain and simple. I had somebody from Ontario ask me about the PSI, the water pressure. They wanted a number and couldn't understand why I wasn't able to provide it. It's a different...
This buyer wanted a map of where we're dumping all our hazardous materials, which apparently they do that in BC.
Interesting. Yeah, that's the whole beauty of working with a realtor in the area that you are looking to buy and sell, because they're knowledgeable about the processes and the rules and things that you should be aware of to help navigate you through that process. So thanks again for listening to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, Prince Edward Islands podcast that helps guide and navigate you through the buying and selling process, and a little bit of Prince Edward Island fun facts as well. We appreciate each and every one of you for downloading and listening to us sometimes banter back and forth, and we look forward to the next episode.
Be sure to follow or subscribe if you're on YouTube listening to this podcast. Give us a comment, a 5-star rating, and if you have any questions about PEI Real Estate or Prince Edward Island in general, send it along. Have a great day.
Have a great day.